The seven Unitarian Universalist principles, as we currently know them, were approved by our Association of Congregations in 1985. The seventh principle, you may recall, is respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. In 1985, the time of the approval of those principles, we had identified five sources of our living tradition: direct experience of mystery and wonder, words and deeds of prophetic women and men, wisdom from the world's religions, Jewish and Christian teachings, and humanist teachings. It wasn't until 1995, 10 years later, that the sixth source of our living tradition was added to that list: spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions that celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. When you visit older UU congregations, if you look at the front of the gray hymnal, you will sometimes find the five sources listed there instead of six if the edition was printed before 1995. Ours is indeed a living tradition, and how we identify and articulate our principles and our sources is continually evolving. As with any such change, which needs approval from thousands of Unitarian Universalists who gather at our annual General Assembly to vote on association business as representatives of their congregations, as with any such change, there was a great deal of discussion and dissension before the change was finalized and accepted. Amending or changing our principles or sources requires a democratic process that requires votes over several years and assemblies. It's not something that just happens once. Particularly, there's usually a year of study, so things come back to the congregation for study and comment. Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions that celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. The phrase earth-centered tradition may be one of the least precise in our principles and sources. Science-oriented UUs certainly consider themselves earth-centered. Any of us who find meaning and nourishment through observance of the cycles of the seasons resonate with the term earth-centered. Native American faith traditions have the strongest claim, I think, on the phrase earth-centered traditions, but our UU congregations can't rightly claim to be in right relationship with Native American communities. It would be cultural misappropriation for Unitarian Universalism to claim Native American practices as part of our particular heritage. We may evolve, we may come to a time where we can be in right relationship, but that's not where we are now. No, the majority of Unitarian Universalists who draw from the sixth source for their personal spiritual practice identify as pagan or neo-pagan. And our service this morning is to increase our collective understanding of these traditions. And since you have a minister whose personal spiritual practice has long been grounded in pagan faith, you will find that what we do here on Sunday morning is often, not always, but often, more steeped in pagan theology than you may have known or understood. So let me explain a bit what these terms mean. Paganism is a really broad term, a blanket term, and it's also a shorthand term. In the same way we sometimes say Unitarian when we really mean Unitarian Universalism, we say pagan when we really mean the more precise and accurate terms neo-pagan, paleo-pagan, or mesopagan. The term neo-pagan acknowledges that we're talking about modern, contemporary pagan religious practice, practices that have come into being since around 1940 or so. neo-paganism is inspired by historical paganism, but it's not the same as historical paganism. And maybe like 20 or 30 years ago, pagans would have claimed they were practicing, you know, like a true tradition, but our scholarship has evolved, and most people really grounded in paganism will acknowledge these things were made up, but we like them anyway. And as I said, they're inspired by historical paganism. Whatever polytheistic rituals were practiced thousands of years ago are not likely to resemble many of the things being done today. Those oldest and lost, often lost practices are most accurately called paleo-paganism. And attempts to reconstruct ancient and lost practices are called mesopaganism. So for example, the ancient Greeks were what we would now call paleo-pagans. It's an original form of pagan practice. They worshipped multiple gods. They worshipped in rituals that were centered around cycles of nature. Modern-day attempts to observe and reconstruct Greek practices, and there are groups that do that, reconstructionist groups, are mesopagan. Modern-day spiritual practices that aren't attempting to reconstruct ancient practices but may invoke Greek gods like Aphrodite and Artemis, you heard those names in our reading, that practice is neo-pagan. So neo-pagan, mesopagan, and paleo-pagan are very scholarly terms, but I wanted you to know them. They're helpful for us to understand important distinctions between faith traditions. So for example, we understand Hinduism or Native American practices as ancient paleo-paganism. They come from those ancient lines. They aren't lost traditions. Native American traditions struggle to hang on, but they have little in common with modern neo-paganism. They're just different. So from here on out, we'll stick with pagan and know that I mean neo-pagan. Paganism as recently created and currently practiced. That word pagan comes from a Latin word, paganus, which refers to a person who lives in the country. It was meant to be a slur, to identify Christianity as the new and modern religion of the big city, while pagans and heathens live on the heath, pagans and heathens were the simple people who followed the old ways, unsophisticated people. Over time, the word pagan came to mean anyone who was not Christian, and more recently, someone who is not Christian, Jewish, or Muslim. In its negative use, it has traditionally meant people who have no faith or no beliefs. Pagans have reclaimed the word pagan over the past few decades especially, embracing it as a positive, not as a slur. Now, paganism is an umbrella term for a lot of other groups. The same way Christian encompasses everyone from Quakers to Assemblies of God, and the same way saying you're Unitarian Universalist tells people some general things about you, but doesn't actually convey anything about your specific theological beliefs. So I'll try to share with you some broad brush statements that will be true of most pagans, neo-pagans, but not all. You have heard and sung about the elements of the four directions, earth, air, fire, water. These elements hold energy we require for balance with the fifth element of spirit. These five elements are signified in the pagan pentacle, the five-pointed star in a circle. The pentacle is an approved emblem for headstones and markers of United States veterans. It's an approved religious symbol. So you've already heard a lot this morning about the elements. It is pagan practice to observe the turning of what's called the wheel of the year, the passing of the seasons with celebrations of solstices, equinoxes, and holidays between those, so eight during the year. In early August, we observe Lammas, or Lunasa, the quarter point between summer solstice and fall equinox. This is traditionally a time of harvesting grains. In our area of the country, we might observe and celebrate the early harvest of our gardens. I have been enjoying fresh tomatoes and basil these last couple of days. We will mark the fall equinox here with our water ritual in September, as has been our tradition. Pagans articulate and observe reverence for multiple gods, often with a special emphasis on the divine feminine, the goddess. Someone came to my door once, a religious person, you know, doing their thing, and asked, I said, I'm pagan. And he was scared and said, you don't believe in God? And I said, oh, no, I believe in lots of gods. And the conversation quickly ended after that. There is no overstating the pagan love of the goddess, the antidote to toxic patriarchy. She is triple the maiden, the mother, and the crone. She reveals herself to us in these guises and more. The waxing moon corresponds to the goddess in her maiden aspect, that time of life when we are young and growing, playful and whimsical. Laughing maiden. The full moon corresponds to the goddess in her mother aspect, that time of life when we are adults at the fullness of our powers and potential. The waning moon, the moon wanes right now, corresponds to the goddess in her crone aspect. You heard from the crone in our story. That time of life when we are physically not as strong as we once were, but we savor the wisdom we have gained from a life well lived. If we were to cast a spell today, we would want to shape our spell to focus on what we want to let go of, what we want less of, to draw power from the energies of the waning moon. These are the three visible aspects of the goddess, and we can see this cycle, wax, blossom, and wane, in the cycle of the day, the month, and the seasons of the year. Spring, summer, and fall. Wax, blossom, and wane. And there's a fourth aspect of the goddess, the new moon, the hidden moon, great mystery. The time she is no longer visible to us, but we know she is still present, for she is never gone. In pagan tradition, this is our understanding of deep winter, when Earth's transforming energy is no longer visible. This is our understanding of the moon cycles, when the moon is no longer visible. This is our understanding of death, when a life is no longer visible. And yet the moon reappears, and winter turns to spring, and life continues even after death. Did I mention spell casting just then? Many pagans cast spells, which I think of as forms of elaborate prayer with incense and candles and symbols. There are really only two rules of paganism, and they are these. As long as you harm no one, do what you want. Harming no one includes you. And whatever you do, positive or negative, returns to you three times over. That's called the threefold law. So if you have notions of spell casting that are about controlling other people's actions or inflicting harm on someone, know that those two rules prohibit such actions. Do what you want as long as you harm no one. Whatever you do returns to you threefold. We, I think, should have a full moon ritual here at Chalice sometime, and we'll cast a spell for more love, healing, and justice in the world. Maybe in February when the full moon is on a Friday. Pagan worship is about ritual, practice, and experience. A sermon is not a pagan practice. Our multi-generational services are much more pagan. When you are asked sometimes to come forward and speak into a microphone or to take something from the altar or to put something on the altar, when we sing and light candles instead of talking and listening about our joys and sorrows, when you are feeling and experiencing worship more than you are thinking and analyzing worship, you are in touch with pagan practice. Our most pagan service all year long is our Brigid service in early February. This year you heard the story of the goddess Brigid and then came forward to receive a gift from her cauldron. Last year you were blessed by the maiden, the mother, and the crone. Our late October service calling our beloved dead is also very pagan. And to be clear, no matter how pagan a few of our services might be and feel in practice, they're not truly pagan rituals for a variety of reasons, foremost of which is that we're Unitarian Universalists. And what we do on Sunday morning may honor other faith traditions, but that's different from actually being followers of those faith traditions. You can't, in spite of my sermon title, you can't really be called pagan if you don't claim that identity for yourself. But many of you have been blessed by the maiden, the mother, and the crone. I thought you should know more about that. My grounding in pagan practice makes its way into much of my theology and much of what is interesting enough to me to talk about in sermons. When I preach that we should love our bodies, that we should have healthy, boundaried sex lives, that we should eat well, all of these come from my pagan understanding that our physical selves and our spiritual selves mirror each other. Our physical, earthly lives matter. What else should you know? The most recent census data, 2008, indicates that about 680,000 people in the United States identify as pagan, with half of those specifically identifying as Wiccan, by far the largest subgroup under that big umbrella. There's lots of reading and studying. Pagans love books. Some pagans practice in groups. Some are solitary. Some groups open their rituals to the public. If you're interested, you can search online for public Sabbat celebrations. Sabbat is what those eight holidays are called. And I forgot until I heard in the Charge of the Goddess, it mentions the rites are naked. You don't need to worry that you will accidentally show up for a naked ritual. That would be super advertised and there'd be guards at the door, and that's not a typical public practice. So that would not happen to you without you being well informed in advance that that was what was happening. Pagan Pride Day in San Diego is coming up next month on September 19th at Liberty Station, if you're interested in that kind of event. And one final note, just like you use come in all kinds of theological flavors, so do pagans, with some radical minority groups even identifying as things like Christian pagans or atheist pagans. Terms that seem incompatible with each other, and there's certainly lots of controversy and discussion in pagan community about those kinds of claims. But we do live in an era of religious exploration and experimentation. My hope for today is that you now have more religious literacy about paganism than you did an hour ago. If you find yourself participating in a pagan ritual someday, you won't be completely disoriented to what's going on. And if you find that you'd like to learn more, I'll post some book recommendations to our Chalice blog on our website. A final lesson. The traditional pagan greeting is Merry Meet. The traditional goodbye is Merry Meet, Merry Part, and Merry Meet Again. So in just a bit, Carol will invite you to say some closing words with her. They'll be projected, And they include those final words. I invite you to say that final part. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again, loudly and enthusiastically, almost shouting. It's how we end ritual together. Pagan practice has brought much joy to my life and much spiritual depth. I hope that learning a little bit more about this faith tradition serves you as well as it has me. Blessed be.